Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This child will be like his grandfather Yudhisthira or Brahma in equanimity of mind. He will be munificent like the Lord of the Kailash Hill, Shiva. And he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is even the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. Okay, the purport is a little bit long, and it's three distinct subject matters. And we'll just read it. Purport. Mental equanimity refers both to Maharaj Yudhisthira and to Brahma, the grandfather of all living beings. According to Sridhar Swami, the grandfather referred to is Brahma, but according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, the grandfather is Maharaj Yudhisthira himself. But in both cases, the comparison is equally good because both of them are recognized representatives of the Supreme Lord. And thus both of them have to maintain mental equanimity, being engaged in welfare work for the living being. Any responsible executive agent at the top of administration has to tolerate different types of onslaughts from the very persons for whom he works. Brahmaji was criticized even by the gopis, the highest perfectional devotees of the Lord. The gopis were dissatisfied with the work of Brahmaji because Lord Brahma, as creator of this particular universe, created eyelids which obstructed their seeing Lord Krishna. They could not tolerate a moment's blinking of the eyes, for it kept them from seeing their beloved Lord Krishna. So what to speak of others who are naturally very critical of every action of a responsible man? Similarly, Maharaj Yudhisthira had to cross over many difficult situations created by his enemies, and he proved to be the most perfect maintainer of mental equanimity in all critical circumstances. Therefore, the example of both grandfathers for maintaining equanimity of mind is quite fitting. Next purport. Lord Shiva is a celebrated demigod who awards gifts to beggars. His name is therefore Ashutosh, or one who is pleased very easily. He is also called the Bhutanath, or the Lord of the common folk, who are mainly attached to him because of his munificent gifts, even without consideration of the after effects. Ravana was very attached to Lord Shiva, and by easily pleasing him, Ravana became so powerful that he wanted to challenge the authority of Lord Ram. Of course, Ravana was never helped by Lord Shiva when he fought with Ram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord of Lord Shiva. The Supreme Personality and the Lord of Lord Shiva. To Vrikasura, Lord Shiva awarded a benediction which was not only awkward, but also disturbing. Vrikasura became empowered by the grace of Lord Shiva to vanish anyone's head simply by touching it. Although this was awarded to Lord Shiva, the cunning fellow wanted to make an experiment of the power by touching the head of Lord Shiva. Thus the Lord had to take shelter of Vishnu to save himself from trouble, and the Lord Vishnu, by his illusory potency, asked Vrikasura to make an experiment with his own head. The fellow did it and was finished himself. He wasn't very intelligent. And so the world was saved from all sorts of trouble by such a cunning beggar of the demigods. The excellent point is that Lord Shiva never denies anyone any sort of gift. He is therefore the most generous, although sometimes some kind of mistake is made. Next purport. Rama means the goddess of fortune, and her shelter is Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the maintainer of all living beings. There are innumerable living beings, not only on the surface of this planet, but also in all other hundreds of thousands of planets. All of them are provided with all necessities of life for the progressive march towards the end of self-realization. But on the path of sense gratification, they are put into difficulty by the agency of Maya, the illusory energy, and so travel the path of a false plan of economic development. Such economic development is never successful because it is illusory. These men are always after the mercy of the illusory goddess of fortune, but they do not know that the goddess of fortune can live only under the protection of Vishnu. Without Vishnu, the goddess of fortune is an illusion. We should therefore seek the protection of Vishnu instead of directly seeking the protection of the goddess of fortune. Only Vishnu and the devotees of Vishnu can give protection to all, and because Maharaj Parikshit was himself protected by Vishnu, it was quite possible for him to give complete protection to all who wanted to live under his rule. Pita Maha Sama Samye Prasade Girishopama Ashraya Sava Bhutanam Yata Devo Rama Ashraya. This child would be like his grandfather Yudhisthira or Brahma in equanimity of mind. He would be munificent like the lord of the Kailash Hill, Shiva, and he will be the resort of everyone like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is even the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune. Excuse me. Yeah. Can I have some more water? Om Jnana Timanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksusun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakaupa Trubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Lord Srila Rupa Goswami, he says that Krishna is like an ocean. His qualities are like an endless ocean. You'll never reach the end of them. And here we have this Lord Brahma and Maharaj Yudhisthira, of course, who's eternal associate of the Lord. But Lord Brahma himself is a jiva, and we know from the descriptions in the Vedic literatures that we should remember that he is a insignificant in the presence of Lord Krishna. It says in the Bhagavatam that after 100 births of performing pious activity, one can take birth as Lord Brahma. And if even one is more pious, he can take birth as Lord Shiva. He can attain Lord Shiva. That's a difference, yeah. But if one is surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he will directly go back to the spiritual world. This topic here is a criticism of the senior personality. Just like on Sankirtan, we go to try to help the people who are immersed in ignorance of themselves, thinking that this world is the final reality, absorbed in the three modes of nature. And sometimes they abuse us. And Prabhupada makes the example that if you go to a mental hospital and people won't accept that they're insane, and they become angry when you tell them. But all this anger and rejection of the person who's trying to help you is due to the false ego. And if you see the example of the exalted devotees, they don't have any false ego. They're always absorbed in Krishna. And we see this example in the Bhagavatam and Leela of the devotees. Just like Narada Muni, he took 10,000 sons of Daksha, preached to them, made them all devotees, and they gave up the path of grihastha life, all become renounced. And Daksha was furious because he's trying to populate the universe with progeny. He wants his sons to have a lot of children, become family men. And then he sent another 1,000 sons, Daksha. Said, you go and perform austerity and get ready for progeny. And Narada Muni again preached to them. They all gave up the path of sense gratification. Immediately all became sannyasis, renounced. So Daksha was so angry. He was so furious. And he came before Narada Muni and he chastised him very heavily. And he cursed him that you'll never stay in one place for more than, 3 days? 72 hours. And Narada Muni remained completely silent. And he just let him get it all off his chest. Later on in the Bhagavatam it says, if you have anger, if you can get it off your chest, release it, then you're pacified. And if you want something, some sense gratification, some material thing, once you get it, you become a little satisfied. But if you're greedy, there is no end. You'll never be peaceful. You'll never be satisfied. There are of these three things, greed is the worst. So another example, Srivas Thakur. They were a little envious in Navadvip of the Vaishnavas, the non-devotees. They were a little envious. They couldn't come to this big Sankirtan party every night. It was, the doors were locked. They just heard it. What are these crazy fellows doing, screaming all night the name of God? They're all crazy people. So one, Gopal Champu, is a little envious. He put the puja paraphernalia for Durga on the doorstep of Srivas Thakur. Some wine and some paraphernalia, what they would worship, tamasic worship of the goddess of material energy for fulfillment of material desires. So some gentleman came, they said, what is this? And Srivas Thakur, he's like, yeah, I've been worshipping Durga, no problem. But the gentleman, they knew he was a pure devotee, so they had it cleaned up. But he wasn't bothered. And who was the least bothered? Lord Narayan himself. Bhrigu Muni and the sages were there. Who is the Supreme Lord? Is it Brahma? Is it Shiva? Is it Narayan? So Bhrigu Muni says, I'll go and find out. So he went to Brahma. He didn't even give him any respect. Brahma became furious. You're my son. You're not giving me any respect. He went to Lord Shiva. What did he do to Shiva? Anyone remember?
He refused to embrace him because he was dirty, yeah, covered in ashes.
Shiva's like his brother and he wanted to embrace him. He said, no, go away. You're dirty. Shiva got so angry, nearly killed him. He went to Lord Narayan, kicked him on the chest. Lord Narayan said, oh, did you hurt your foot? So when this amazing response, then he understood that the Lord is situated in pure goodness. And this is the quality of a Vaishnava, an exalted Vaishnava. Just like we can all be sitting here, we're also spiritual, chanting our japa, attending deity greeting, Bhagavatam class. Then we get in our car, drive through Watford, and someone gives us a bit of road, you know. Immediately we become angry because we're on the platform of our false ego. And Krishna consciousness means to attain the state of shantim, mamvya bichoda. Mam yovya bicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatichai chan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. That if we're always engaged in remembering Krishna, then we become more peaceful, we become transcendental to the modes of nature, and the false ego becomes little pacified, little less. And for the pure devotee, it becomes almost zero. It becomes zero, actually. That's the expertise of the pure devotee. He's never caught out. They said to Prabhupada, oh, you came here in a Rolls Royce, what kind of spiritual person are you, taking this material opulence? Prabhupada said, it's not good enough. If God came, or God's representative, you give him a gold Rolls Royce made of solid gold, it's not good enough. So Prabhupada's never, he never had any false ego to fight back, you're attacking me. He was always had the perfect answer because he's a perfect person. If you read Prabhupada's books for 30, 40, 50 years, you'll not find one mistake. Practically speaking, you'll not find one mistake. Everything is perfect. The way he phrases every sentence is perfect because he's a perfect person. He has no false ego. His subtle body is completely evaporated. He's in his spiritual body. Subtle body means material desires. That's what subtle body means. It's full of thousands of material desires. So the process of Krishna consciousness means to, in the beginning, we have to overcome the gross material desires, and then later to purify these subtle anattas, anatta pashamam shakshat, bhakti yoga. So this bhakti yoga is for that purpose, to purify the anattas. In this purport, Prabhupada quotes, paraphrases a verse from the ninth canto. It's the last verse of the ninth canto. Yasyananam makara kundala charukana brojat kapola subagam savila sahasam nichotsavam na tatribu drishibi pipantyo naryo narascha kupita kudita muditas nimescha. That this verse is spoken by the gopis. It's like a prelude to the tenth canto. So they're saying, whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a utsav, he sees a festival. His cheeks are bright, he wears shark-shaped earrings, he is smiling very beautifully. Nityotsava tatrapi, it's like drinking nectar through the eyes, bibantyo drishibi. And this mudita, this Brahma, he's a fool, because he's created these eyelids for this moment. I cannot see Krishna when I blink. Sometimes the gopis, they want to pray that they have eyes like fish. Fish do not blink, apparently. Fish do not blink. So they want to drink this nectar constantly without interruption. And when Krishna enters Mathura, the women folk of Mathura, they say the same thing. Pibantyo, how is it that how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan that they're always seeing, drinking through their eyes, the beauty of Krishna's form. So is this criticism of Brahma? What do you think? What kind of criticism is this? Will Brahma take it seriously? No. Brahma actually probably enjoys this criticism because it enhances his Krishna consciousness. It expands the mood, the feeling. Just like Krishna himself, he also gets criticized. Or Krishna's flute gets criticized. The gopis say, who is this flute drinking nectar of Krishna's lips, which are in fact our property, it's our possession? Who is this flute? And they berate the flute. And they sometimes glorify the flute. And they sometimes criticize Krishna. But this criticism is not like the criticism of the material world. Just like we're all addicted to criticizing other people. Fault finding. This is one of the things we have to get over and see the good in everyone. Everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna. Even Donald Trump is a part and parcel of Krishna. It's a joke, by the way. So we have to see the good in everyone. And this criticism is very interesting, actually, that we see that this criticism is tolerated by Brahma and Yudhisthira. They're in a position, just like our temple president, our GBCs, they have to tolerate so much Krishna criticism. Our devotees who go and preach, they get criticized. Oh, you're this, you're that. Now we're getting attacked by the vegans because, you know, you put a picture of elephant, the temple elephants in Mayapur, and everyone's like, oh, these poor elephants, you took them out of the jungle and all that, you know. You took them out of their natural abode and you're exploiting them. But the elephants are very happy serving Krishna, I've seen. They're not unhappy. And they've got everything they need. Or we're exploiting cows for milk, or we're taking the honey from the bees. So we're getting criticism from, you know, like we're the peaceful guys trying to spread a bit of love and peace in the world, vegetarianism. But now the vegans are criticizing us. So we have to tolerate because they're haven't got the full picture. They haven't got the full picture of the world that Prabhupada's given us. But sometimes criticism is good, right? Krishna criticized Arjuna. You don't want to fight. You're not following your dharma. Your dharma is to chastise the adharmic principle, right? So criticism is sometimes necessary when it upholds dharma or supports the principle of progressive human realization. Just like Nanda Maharaj, he said, I don't care that Krishna's, my son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If I have to correct him, if I have to chastise him, it's for his benefit. So sometimes the parent, he chastises the child, or the guru chastises the disciple. But he does it for the good, right? To follow Dharma. Not that the parent or the child criticizes for its own motivation. Krishna's not motivated. Krishna said to Arjuna, listen, don't worry, they're already killed. I've killed them already. I don't care if you do it or not. It's up to you. You see? Krishna didn't mind. He was chastising Arjuna for the principle of Dharma, following the proper behavior of a Kshatriya like that. So that's the end of that first paragraph that I was going to speak, because now there's three subject matters here. So now we talk about this Lord Shiva, and there's a whole chapter in Krishna book about how Yudhisthira Maharaj asked this question at the end of the Rajasuya sacrifice, and Parikshit Maharaj asked the same question to Sukadeva Goswami. How is it that the devotees of Lord Shiva lives in a cave practically, covered in ashes, he has no possessions, he's a very austere, renounced tyagi, but all his devotees, they're all rich, practically. They're all wealthy, and Lord Vishnu, he's a supreme opulence, he has 16,000, he's living in palaces, and yet his devotees are very poor. So this question was asked twice in these circumstances, and Krishna was happy about this question because the answer is very important for our understanding. Very important. So Srila Prabhupada, Sukadeva Goswami, they analyze that the wealth and opulence of this material world is just made up of 16 elements. Five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, five gross elements, and what was the other one? What's the 16th? The mind? Yes. No. I can't remember. Anyone know? Sleeping? No. Okay. So, anyway. So, these things are all temporary. And they are not actually a benediction. Because the false ego in the material world will become attracted to material opulence and forget himself. And therefore, when Shiva gives these benedictions, he's in a type of mood where he doesn't really care for the living entity as much as Krishna. Therefore, the demigods, they make this prayer in the fifth canto, Satyam Dishati Artita Artita Ninam Naivartito Yadpuna Artita Yata Svayam Vidate Anichidam Pidanam Nijapadala Palavam. I've forgotten. So this verse says that if Krishna is asked to fulfill material desire, he will do so. But he will be very thoughtful before he does it. And he will not give anything to his devotee that causes his devotee in the long term to come off the path of devotional service. Artita, artita. If he wants it again and again, Krishna will not give it. He'll give it once, maybe. Okay, I'll give you once, but not again and again. And if you're such a fool that you keep performing devotional service for your temporary material body, your temporary material desires, then Krishna says, if I favor someone, I'll take everything away from him and give him my lotus feet, even if he doesn't want it. So for his devotees, you've got to understand that this is for his devotees. Krishna's kindness is so far out, it's so unlimitedly wonderful, that he'll give himself even though we don't want him. Huh? This is Krishna's kindness. He'll arrange for us to get his lotus feet even after we try to escape. So Krishna's in charge of his devotees. He takes care of his devotees, and protects them from their karma and elevates them to the spiritual platform, to the transcendental platform. But this is not given by the devotees of Shiva and other demigods. The demigods are very happy to give their followers material rewards according to their Yanti Deva Bhuta Devan, according to their ability. But only Krishna can liberate the living entity. So this whole pastime was there, Vrikasura. This incarnation, this form of the Lord that came in front of Vrikasura was like Vamanadeva, small boy, brahmachari. And he attracted Vrikasura and made him touch his own head. I was going to say something else, but I forgot about that. Sachantisha ati atita atita ninam. Navatito yat puna atita yata. And this final purport is about the goddess of fortune. Anyone notice anything interesting about this? Prabhupada says, we should therefore seek the protection of Vishnu instead of directly seeking the protection of the goddess of fortune. Anyone notice anything interesting about that statement? Come to anyone's mind? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. So Prabhupada says in other purports that the Vaishnava devotees, they take shelter of Srimati Radharani more than Krishna, because she is a feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, and she is more compassionate. And that is the nature of the devotee, to take shelter of Radharani, Srimati Radharani, more than Krishna, actually. This is the Gaudiya path. We cannot approach Krishna directly. We approach Krishna through his devotees. So here Krishna, Prabhupada is saying the exact opposite practically. But you have to understand the circumstance or the philosophical principle. Because everyone is very fond of worshipping Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, give me money, this, worshipping Durga like that. But they do so thinking that they are this body and they seek material profit. So this is an illusion. And this is what the Vaishnava devotees, what the Vedas ultimately want to save the world from, is this chasing the illusory energy life after life, giving it up, becoming a worshipper of Krishna. Like that. Okay, thank you very much. Perhaps we could have some topics for discussion and questions. There's a lot in here, and just skim the surface. Thank you. Hare Krishna.